Scott, your host at Sharing the Burden. We're live every Tuesday morning, 10 a.m. here on 102.9 FM, Stouffville. We have a great little show here, and we have a lot of people who talk about a lot of overcoming stories. And today we have our very own producer, Jay Rumball, talking about his life and what he's overcome and what it's like. So Jay, as I put things over to you momentarily, maybe in your own words, you can give us some of your journey and some of the highlights and, maybe tell us what it was like earlier on in life and, your struggles and how that compares to where you're at today. So, my friend, it's all yours. I'll butt in once in a while, and you want me to butt in, you just give me a signal.
Go ahead. Anytime. No, Scott, thanks again for having me on the show. And, it's been great to, be a producer here and to learn about the many stories about, the guests that you've had on your show, to, listen to what they've had to overcome and just to think, yeah, I actually have a story myself to overcome. Like it all happened, for me, ever since the day I was born. I was, born with some fluid around the brain called hydrocephalus. And, I needed to have, surgery right away to prevent any, damage to the brain and things like that. So, as I mentioned before, being born in Scarborough and then having to go down to Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto for surgery, and I was lucky to have one of the a great surgeon. I'm not too sure if he's still alive today, Dr. Humphreys, very well known neurosurgeon at Sick Kids Hospital, who put in these tubes on my head called shunts to relieve this pressure that was surrounding my brain. And for some kids that are born with this, the consequence is some of them, they don't make it, or they end up being very disabled. Then for me, they were able to do this operation, and from there I was followed at SickKids. I had to go back, I think I was 5 or 6 years old, and they do what they call a revision, where they extend the tubing for these shunts. And there's been a lot of debate. The doctors are, they weren't too sure what I was actually, like, some of them believed it to be cerebral palsy, some of them said spina bifida, and some of them, they weren't too sure what the primary, I guess, disability or diagnosis was. So I think from what I've learned, throughout the years, and just from seeing all the different specialists, that it's a mild form of spina bifida. Like, there's kids that I went to school with, I went to school called Sunnyview, and most of the kids at that school had some various disabilities, and some of them had spina bifida as well, but they had paralysis or in a wheelchair. And that's where I find I'm lucky in a way that I was fairly independent for most of my life. And to be with the kids that were weren't able to speak or weren't able to do things for themselves, and so that's where I was lucky in that sense. And there was times where my parents thought that I was gonna die very young, that I was gonna end up not making it that far. And but I think it was the through SickKids, and I've also went to the this has a variety of different names. I know it's called the Bloorview Kids Rehabilitation Hospital now, and at the time that I was going there, they used the C word, crippled, Ontario Crippled Children's Center, and that's one of the outpatient clinics that followed me for a variety of my diagnosis. I've had problems with my bladder and things like that, like this, with spina bifida comes, you know, problems with walking and a variety of different things that affect the nervous system. So I would go to the Hugh McMillan Center and to see the, you know, variety of different specialists on an outpatient basis. And, you know, whenever I need surgery and that, I go to, you know, SickKids. And, like, I know Peter that we talk about on the show, he had a curvature in his spine. And so I had similar surgery to what he had when I was 16. So I was in high school at the time. And, you know, so... it was definitely a challenge growing up, like going through, going through these different tests and illnesses, and mm-hmm. and you know, to when I went to Sunnyview, it was kind of strange because I was one of the more independent kids, mm-hmm. and then my parents thought, Jay's fairly independent. Why don't we move him to the school that's closer to our home? So that was quite the transition going mm-hmm. from being, you know, very one of the more independent kids to going to a school where I was pretty much, the one that had the disability that everybody else was, fairly able-bodied. And, mm-hmm. and I think that's where, I've gone through a lot of... examples of being bullied and stuff like that because I was different. And, that was a hard thing to do. Like, that mm-hmm. was a, there's, some kids that were very understanding and, made me feel welcome. But then there was, some kids that just didn't seem to get it. They'd make fun of the way I walk or run or, things like that. And it was very hurtful.
Well, let me ask you, Jay, there on that vein. As you grew up and you're, what are you now, close to 40 or?
42, yeah.
42. And,
yeah.
And even now, because I see people, I watch people, and do you even notice even today that whether or not kids so much, just people in general treating you, they're just a little different because you're not moving the same way they are or whatever, you've got to see, you probably don't even notice it anymore, but
yeah,
there's got to be that, there's, it's just, it seems innate in a lot of humanity that anyone, anything, any animal, any person who is different in any way gets treated differently.
Yeah, there is some people that do that, exactly, yeah, for sure.
I like to feel, and maybe it's because I'm getting older, but that, we're really all in this thing together. And the sooner we realize that when any little piece of the whole deal is not doing well, the whole thing is not doing near as well as it could, And I think we had a common front like that in our brains, at least, we'd be a lot more compassionate with all the different, different illnesses, the different... the groups, the different ways of thinking, the different cultures. So, but anyway, you're kind of a leader in that for me, and I like to watch that. And again, really appreciate what you're doing here, especially going to school and in a place where everybody sort of has something, and then being put in a place where everybody thinks they have nothing,
right?
But they notice that you have something in their own head. So you're the one to be picked on, sadly, in this crazy world. That seems to be the way things work, isn't it? So anyway, you've done a phenomenal job, and I'm going to let you keep on going there. And, whenever you feel like you've said enough or you want me to comment on an area, just rope me in. All yours, my friend.
All right. Yeah, sounds good. Yeah. So, there's been, some changes in my life for, having to adjust to, going from, from Sunnyview to Holy Spirit, where, my sister, was going there at the time. And, unfortunately, she was, we weren't, at school at the same time, which she was a few grades ahead of me. But, speaking of my sister, we'll get to, how wonderful she is. And, there's been, I think the bullying and that, I think that it you know, it happened right up till maybe grade 11, grade 12, and that's where, you know, I just realized that I, you know, I got to start, you know, sticking up for myself and just to, you know, be comfortable with who I am and not to, you know, sure, some people are going to say, you know, things that aren't nice, but, you know, if you're, you know, positive and just believe in what you do, then, you know, you can do that. You can do whatever you want. And so, yeah, there's been, you know, times where I've had to, you know, move around. I lost my dad very young. He was only, 52 at the time. And so, you know, that's where, you know, my mom, you know, took over, you know, raising me. And my sister, who I talked about, very close with her, you know, so they, it was, you know, for my mom to, like she was working at the time, but then when I was born, you know, that's when, you know, things has changed. She, my dad would go to work full time and my mom would be there pretty much all the time, you know, going to, the different, doctors and, surgeries and things like that. And, so she, you know, she did a lot of, advocating on my behalf and, you know, making sure that the doctors did, you know, there was times where, like I have a deformity on my right hand and the thumb is not, it doesn't look right. And one doctor was going to, you know, amputate it. And my mom said, no, you know, don't do that. That's going to, you know, take away some of my independence. So, So there's times where she had to speak up and say, hey, you know, this is not right for Jay and we got to do what's best. So, you know, it was great to have her there, you know, just to, you know, to be there for me all the time. And, you know, as I got older and understood, you know, what I was going through, you know, and I think with the, you know, having the internet and different resources, I think to, you know, it helped me to understand, you know, my my various, you know, illnesses. And at one point I was thinking about being a doctor. I was just so inspired by, you know, what, you know, these doctors have done for me. And you know, I've had some really, really good doctors that, you know, with, you know, my case, I get, you know, it doesn't, it requires a lot of, a lot of research, a lot of, you know, paperwork and things like that. And you know, actually, when I go to a doctor's office or emergency, I have a list of my medications and all my diagnosis on one page, and I'm surprised that I can fit it all on one page. That with all the stuff that I've been through, and like I was had a surgery, bowel surgery a few years ago, and the surgeon at the time, he never saw me before, but he must have had at least, you know, 10, you know, quite a number of pages on me, and just to go through all that, and he looked at me and he said, we've never met before, have we? And like thinking that, you know, we've seen each other before. But so I think with me, I think I'm glad that the doctors have a lot of detailed reports on, you know, what I've been through. And
So are you on a lot of different medications now? I mean, you obviously are on some, but you know, I bet there was times when, well, let me ask you, do you ever get used to any drugs? Were you ever taking anything that could have become addictive, for instance? You know, I'm curious, because you've got to have been through a ton of stuff.
I'm sure after a few surgeries, but I know after the scoliosis surgery, I was on morphine, and and a lot of people say morphine could be a very addictive drug, you know, but for me, I had like the pump where I just click on the thing, and then it gives me the medication after that, and... I did have a tough time with, like, after that. Like, I was quite sick. I was homeschooled for a while, and I remember I went through quite a rough time. I you know, had to learn how to walk again and things like that. And, you know, just so might have been the after effects of the morphine. I'm not too sure, but I think morphine has been the one thing that
You sort of understand, I think it's definitely, it's very addictive. And as a matter of fact, today, and you probably know this, Jay, but a lot of people are allowed to be addicted to it. Mm-hmm. There was a time when my uncle, for instance, in the 50s, had cancer, had stomach cancer and so on, and he suffered terribly. And mm-hmm. the reason he suffered so bad was they were only allowed to administer or to give so much morphine regardless of the pain or the problem.
Right, right.
Today it's strictly, it's supposed to be anyway, strictly the person and the pain, and whatever they can't stand they can get more for, because who cares if you're addicted or not when you're out of pain.
Mm-hmm. So,
but anyway, you've got a good handle on that. You mentioned doctors and becoming, even thinking of becoming a doctor at some point. And then with everything you've had and your sheet full of diagnoses and so on, do you have a good all-around person in your life medically? I mean, is there a, you could call them your own family doctor or whatever, it doesn't matter, but him or her, but do you have one that you can rely on pretty well to make sure that the rest of the medical world who would have to deal with you in any way would be able to consult and he or she would know it all?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Like you're talking about medications, and I think one of the biggest surgeries that I've ever had is 19 years ago, my sister saved my life with the gift of a kidney transplant. So, the last, 19 years, my kidney doctor has been probably, one of my number one doctors to make sure that I have the right medication, that they're not just looking at the kidney, they're just looking at your health overall. So I think the kidney specialist at St. Mike's, and I'm also seeing another one in Richmond Hill, so I think having them definitely do help for sure. Well, yeah,
are there meds specific to the kidney problem that you might take? Maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's a few drugs that you have to take to prevent any rejection of the kidney, that to make sure that the when you go through a kidney transplant, that you have to take these what they call anti-rejection drugs. Probably the one of the most common is prednisone, that is widely used not just for kidney problems, but for a variety of different illnesses. So I've had to take that for 19 years, and a couple other ones. And your blood pressure is also affected when you're have kidney problems or going through a kidney transplant. So you have to take medication for blood pressure, and I've I also see a bladder doctor, so I have to take medication to, prevent any, bladder infections and things like that. And mm-hmm. so it's a matter of, the doctors kind of communicating together. I think that's one of the things that has really helped with my care, is that, the different specialists talking to each other and, making sure that everything all, adds up. But I think it all comes back to, the kidney doctor to make sure that everything else, because they, I go for blood tests. Like right now, it's every couple weeks, and from a blood test, you can tell a lot about a person's health, that way. So, with that, and I know, within the last year, things, been going through some, challenges with that. 19 years, it's been a quite a long time, and doctors, they predicted that this kidney transplant would only last 10 years, and on average for living donors about 15 years. So for me, it's 19 years, and within the last year they've noticed some changes that even I've noticed myself, different symptoms, like shortness of breath, and I get tired sometimes, and so that's where the blood tests have shown that the kidney is failing. I'm gonna need a new kidney. I'm not too sure when that will be. Mm-hmm. The the prognosis keeps changing. I go see the kidney specialist tomorrow to find out, you know, how things are going, and you know what they want to do all they can to you know, keep the kidney going, because you know, they know you know, things are slowly starting to deteriorate, but you know, with changes to my diet and maybe some medication adjustments, things like that, they can prolong it as much as they can. And because I, the doctor that I'm seeing tomorrow, I've actually, he helped me years ago when I was going through, when I lost my kidney the first time. And, you know, over 21 years, I had, you know, I've was having issues with, I was only born with the one kidney, and, and you know, having bladder issues, I have trouble emptying my bladder, so I have to use a catheter for that. So you know, with the bladder and the kidney, like, it you know, they kind of work together, and when one's not working right, that affects the other one. So going to, you know, Sick Kids as a child and the Hugh McMillan Center, they would keep an eye on my kidney and bladder, and you know, slowly over about 21 years it started to fail, and I was, you know, very sick at the time, and I had no idea that my kidney was failing. Like, my family doctor at the time thought it was a flu. And sometimes they, you know, kidney failure can be confused with a flu. So so that's where, you know, I was, you know, quite sick. And then I was referred to the York Central Hospital, where I'm going to tomorrow, to the doctor there. And then within about couple months about being diagnosed, I was put on kidney dialysis, and I was on that for about a year, 9 months. So it was, you know, three times a week going to the hospital, 4 hours per treatment, and you know, it was tough. I was only 21 at the time, and going to college, and I had to you know, delay my college graduation because you know, my health came first, so I had to put other things on hold. I was hoping to graduate in 2 years, but it ended up graduating in 3 years. And you know, just going through that, it was tough because I had to, you know, watch my diet and how much I drank and things like that, and you know, very sick and tired, and a lot of times I would just go and just, you know, sleep while I was on the machine, or I would bring in movies to, you know, help pass the time, because you're on the machine for a good, you know, 3-4 hours. So, you know, it was a rough time. And then my, you know, it was my birthday, and my sister surprised me with some news. So we're talking in the kitchen there, and she, said she's gonna donate a kidney.
Gonna give you that.
Yeah.
Give you your life back.
Mm-hmm.
What a gift.
No, it's quite a surprise.
Jay, why don't you catch your breath there and tune us out for half a song or something?
We'll come back and
hear more about the kidney story.
Clap along if you feel like a room without. Because I'm